It's time now for the complete story with Dick Bott, a public news and information feature of Bott Radio Network, to keep you informed about the most important issues of our day. Now, here is Dick Bott with today's complete story.
Tell you what, folks, it's an amazing thing. I never thought 50 years ago when Bott Radio Network was started that we would be having programs discussing, you know, the value of marriage in the way that it's being talked about today. Now, listen to this. It has been long proven that children fare best at every level if they can grow up with their father and mother, said our guest, and whom we'll be talking to in just a few moments. Well, isn't that amazing, you know, that people are even having to think twice about that? Now, since more than 40% of U.S. babies today are born out of wedlock, which is the greatest predictor of poverty for women and children. And we have an alarming drop in marriage rates. Nearly 80% of all adults were married in the year 1970. However, today, only 52% of the adults are married. The need is greater than ever for a positive campaign to strengthen marriage. The Brookings Institute said that if the U.S. had the marriage rate today that it had in 1970, there would be a 25% drop in poverty. The Heritage Foundation said that marriage drops the probability of a child living in poverty by 82%. I guess maybe we have to say, but do the adults care? What about the culture? What on earth is happening when the subject of marriage and what it is and what the benefits are of marriage, not only in the Bible, and that's perfectly clear, but in just history and every other society? So our guest today is Sheila Weber, and she's the executive director of National Marriage Week. And she's been the spokesperson on more than 500 radio programs, 100 television shows, and many other venues for the cause of marriage and other issues. She has a master's in public policy from New York University, her thesis being the role of public policy on the dissolution of marriage culture. Well, Sheila, welcome to the complete story here on Bott Radio Network. But let's start out with that and tell us about that role of public policy and how it affects the marriage culture.
Well, thank you so much for having me. You know, we are in the middle of National Marriage Week this week, which is February 7th to the 14th. Well, years ago, really with the advent of no-fault divorce, this made divorce very fast and quick, but we have since learned that it sort of disadvantages one of the parties, that they there are many spouses who are really not getting fair treatment in this quick divorce culture. But also, research showed a year ago that 33% of the people today getting a divorce are actually open to reconciliation. And yet, we don't slow down the process enough.
Sheila, could I mention, see, I'm an old-timer. Our audience knows that. And I remember when no-fault divorce first came on the scene. I think it started in California. Mm-hmm. And you know, the way it was sold by the media at that time and everything, why, it seemed so reasonable that people shouldn't have to labor and get into battles and all that sort of thing. And they said, well, when people want to get a divorce, let's just make it easy for them, and it seems reasonable, and it'll just be better for everybody. And that, but what I think came along later on then is there was a loss of commitment to the marriage, and it seemed to trivialize the whole idea of what marriage is as part of a commitment that people should be making as they go into it. So it really didn't produce any benefit, but it did produce a weakening, almost like a little crack in the dike at that time of what marriage is about. But go ahead.
Well, yes. I mean, obviously, there's certain cases where there's abuse and things like that, that you don't want the process to be so cantankerous, but I do think what it's done is create a consumer mindset toward marriage rather than a covenant mindset. And I say the consumer, it's kind of like, gosh, I don't like this dress. I'm going to take it back to the store and get another one. And we sort of have this attitude of, you know, you're not making me happy, therefore I'm going to, you know, return you for another model. So it is also proven that if couples can sort of get through some of the hurdles, cross and jump the hurdles, that there is the comfort of companionship on the other side, and there, if they can get the message that there are ways to find restoration and reconciliation, it's just that today the social media is sort of telling you get out and get out quick. So it's a very complex situation that so yes, there's some public policy issues, but there's also just the social cultural change that has created a different mindset. But we want to get the word out to people that marriage has so many benefits. So we want to spin a new story than we've been hearing lately.
First of all, what is marriage?
Well, you know, marriage is both a private, a public, and legal, and then religious commitment. Certainly for certain people, it is a religious vow toward God. And our focus on National Marriage Week is to reduce divorce, to promote marriage over cohabitation, and to promote marriage prior to childbearing. So we are focused on that, and we have many other people who are getting involved with issues of gay marriage today, and we're sort of just trying to keep our focus on the three things that have become such huge problems that they deserve attention all in of themselves. It's, you know, men and women for many decades have been brewing these problems, so we're trying to not create a lot of distractions and just focus on the problem that men and women have been having for the last many decades.
Hmm. Do you remember that old song by Frank Sinatra, "Love and Marriage"? I think about that a lot because that man, that goes back. Does that go back to the 40s or 50s or somewhere in there? But his song "Love and Marriage," and I remember specifically, it was in that order: love, and then marriage, and then comes the baby carriage.
Right.
It just seemed to be such, and you know what? That was a pop song. That was a popular song. No one questioned whether the sequence, you know, should be. Everybody just understood love comes first.
Right.
Whatever that is, you see, we could talk about that a lot. But then
well,
marriage
an
and
old
marriage
adage
is
that came out of that. You know?
Marriage seals the deal,
right.
And then the baby
a,
carriage.
A little a rhyme that came along, and I think there was some subliminal effect that it had on people's thinking. So we've sort of lost that mindset, and I think we have a problem with the celebrity culture.
Now, ultimately, isn't it then for the benefit of the children?
Absolutely.
For the benefit of the
yes.
family unit that
this
produces the next generation.
Child. And so there is just overwhelming research that show that children who are raised by both their mother and father have much better academic performance, less trouble with the law, much less teen pregnancy and addiction. I mean, the statistics are overwhelming. So if you want to give your child the greatest advantage, you really first need to be married, and if at all possible, sometimes, you know, people do find themselves in unwanted circumstances. So we value every human life, but we're just saying, you know, if it's within your control, pursue marriage first. In fact, it's a huge issue for poverty. Marriage is really the unsung anti-poverty program. Because, as you cited, the statistics from Brookings and Heritage, both the left and the right, are in agreement on this. There would be so much less poverty if we had an increase in marriage. And divorce and single motherhood are the greatest causes of poverty for women and children. In fact, I took note recently there was a report that surprised me quite a lot that the New York City Human Resource Commissioner might start planning a campaign for marriage because more than 70% of the babies born in the Bronx here in New York City are to unwed mothers. So we know we have a growing social crisis, but it is multifaceted. So our goal with National Marriage Week is to be a launching event for something that continues all year long. So we also have the Let's Strengthen Marriage campaign that continues all year. And what we've done is we've mobilized just up to 1,000 events all across the country where people can go to marriage classes, conferences of all the different groups that exist. There's so many that exist. We don't create a product. We want to be the rising tide that floats all boats. So we're supporting so many different marriage education groups and family ministries, and we want to get the word out to people. We have the only calendar where all those groups can post their activities. So that national calendar can be found at nationalmarriageweekusa.org. We add the USA on because Marriage Week is happening in more than 20 countries around the world.
Well, then this effort right now to call attention to this is beyond the borders of the United States.
Right. It's very exciting. This Marriage Week was actually founded in the UK. It is now in Germany and Ireland and Czech Republic, New Zealand, Australia, Italy, many other places, and it's thriving and growing strong as a way to celebrate marriage in those countries and to get the word out as to how you can work on your own marriage. If you need help, there are places to go. Most people really are clueless. They don't know where to turn if they need help. And at the same time, you can help others. There are so many wonderful ways you can impact your church or your community. And so we have created a toolkit so that local small towns or churches can create a Marriage Week campaign. The week leading up to Valentine's Day, and there's so many simple ideas. Ask your clergyman to preach about marriage on the Sunday closest to Valentine's Day, or launch a class, a Sunday school class, a home group. There are lots of resources and ideas, videotapes and workbooks and that kind of thing. I actually love some of the stories that are happening. In fact, in the Midwest particularly, so much is happening. In Kankakee County, Illinois, there is a collaboration of churches that are setting up a booth in a shopping mall from February 7th to the 14th, and they're providing free professional marriage counseling all week to couples. So they've got free, they've got professional counselors who are offering their services all week. And then there's a whole group in the whole Chicago area that is mobilizing date night events. And, for example, in Ohio, there's a sweetheart dinner and dance. There's a renewal of the vows ceremony. So you can find all these activities near you if you plug in your state, and you can see what's happening in your state.
When you say 70% of all babies born in the Bronx, there are some other statistics here that are really just astounding. The Heritage Foundation says that marriage drops the probability of a child living in poverty by 82%. Mm-hmm. Now, I'm thinking also, what about the single moms right now, you see, and even the single dads? Mm-hmm. It's a whole new phenomena. What would you say to them? I mean, this is kind of after the fact. You can't unscramble the egg.
Right.
And
I would say that they should aspire.
Before you respond, I was thinking of what Dr. Benjamin Carson said just a few days ago, you see, at the National Prayer Breakfast,
mm-hmm.
Where he said his story was he was raised by a single mom, for goodness sakes, who had been married at 13,
right.
And it was tough sledding. And she absolutely refused to take a government handout or whatever that way. That was in his case, you see. But she just had to do double duty. It was tough sledding.
Right.
And it was rough. But when you're in the middle of the river, the only thing you can do is swim to the other side, isn't it?
Well, that's true. If you find yourself in a circumstances, I know Dr. Ben Carson's mother has such a great story that, you know, she did not enter into this situation thinking that she was going to simply go after government benefits. She worked very hard. She also taught her children to work hard, and so she has a very laudable story. You know, if you're in the middle of the situation, I would say that you should aspire to marriage. It's still not out of your reach, whether it is, the father of your current children. Sometimes, you know, people need help in kind of making that commitment and coming together. And sometimes it's you know, another scenario. So, you know, people should at least value that marriage could bring so much stability. There's one thing I want to point out, though, is people are kind of looking at their future, and as they talk to young people, that if a young person graduates from high school, works full-time, and postpones marriage and childbearing until after the age of 21, there's only a 2% chance that they'll end up in poverty. If they don't do those three things, there's a 77%.
Where does education come into it?
Well, you have to graduate from high school and work full-time and postpone marriage and childbearing until after 21 years old. Those three things, if you don't do them, you have a 77% chance of being in poverty. So, you know, those are all sort of bundled together, but certainly marriage and childbearing is a part of that mix for financial stability. I mean, if people today are very concerned about financial stability, you have far greater financial stability for your children and for your family and your home. If you're in a marriage, you should take good care of it, value it, and go to some classes, go to marriage classes, and read books and learn how to better yourself and how you and your husband can have a better chance at succeeding for the sake of your children.
Yeah, but this is wonderful, and I want our listeners to understand we're examining this entire subject, and it is a path. It has elongated. Imagery or situation here, because we are talking, I suppose, to young people or parents of young people who are 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18, and they need preparation, I suppose, how to look at marriage, what marriage is, and what it means to have a solemn commitment, and what even a solid commitment amounts to. So in preparation for the young people's thinking and aspiration to do it right the first time, that means taking great care and making good decisions. But then afterwards, then, of course, you're into a marriage. And the thing is, you mentioned just now, protecting your marriage. Life itself is always changing. You can never put your foot in the same river twice, someone said, because the water is moving. So when you're in a marriage, why, you protect it and build it and understand that life with your mate will be what you make it. Is that a good...
Encourage people to think about regular date nights. It's a simple concept, but it's proven that if you have regular date nights with your spouse, it increases enjoyment, communication, and intimacy. And we've got lots of stuff on NationalMarriageWeekUSA.org about how to have better date nights. So we have some practical tips. But I'm also very concerned about the unfortunate message that the celebrity culture is sending to regular Americans who don't have the finances that these, you know, when celebrity couples are cohabiting, they're unwed, but they're parenting, you know, unfortunately, economically, they can kind of do anything they want, but it really hurts the lower class.
See, well, wait a minute, though. Economically, they can do whatever they want, and that probably changes from day to day, but it always hurts the kids.
Right, right. I wanted to draw the connection, though, that people need to sort of wake up and realize that the messages that they're hearing from celebrities don't translate to them. You know, just because a celebrity says it's cool and marriage is outdated and we don't need it, I'm just pointing out that it does not translate to the working class Americans. In fact, there was a book that came out last year that was quite overwhelming in that it says that the upper class of our culture, actually marriage is sort of holding its own. I mean, yes, it's dropped a little bit, but marriage is falling off a cliff for working class, and it only studied white America. So, for example, in a working class white American town today, only 37% of children are living with their father and the mother, but that was 96% in 1960. 96% of that group was living with their mother and father in 1960.
So if we've reached a tipping point, we're certainly going down the wrong side rapidly.
Yeah. And I get concerned because the messages that the media and celebrity culture is sending to regular Americans is that, you know, you don't need this. You don't need marriage. And it's just not correct, because your children will experience the loss of security, both financial, emotional, they will be much more prone to difficulties. And this is what we want to get the word out to people, that if you have a marriage, you're fortunate, then take good care of it. And if not, certainly do a reflection on if you're living with someone, you know, you really should think about the difference between commitment and that lack of commitment, because the statistics are not good. If women think that they're going to somehow get lifelong lasting love through cohabitation, unfortunately, it doesn't work out that way. Almost 70% of cohabiting couples break up. The 30% that get married, 20% of those, 20% end in divorce. So it doesn't really work out. And women need to kind of be alert to the fact that what they hope for, this is not the best path for them. You know, so we have so many ways that we want people to just revalue marriage and to understand the benefits that it brings. Married people live longer lives, they have better health, greater wealth, and greater personal happiness.
The children are the innocent. The children are the defenseless. The children didn't ask for any of it, nor were they consulted. Here they are, and yet they are the next generation. And we have now been recycling that, actually projecting that downward slip for so many years. They're in some families, they cannot recall a relative that hasn't maybe gone to the altar several times.
Right.
If they have gone to the altar at any time,
yes,
it's a sad thing. Now,
you know,
tell me this.
We are just hoping that we can get the word out to people about the facts and what the research shows so that they will reevaluate some of the choices that they're making, but also that there is tremendous hope. There are tremendous stories of people who find reconciliation and forgiveness and renewal, and they learn how to be a better spouse, and they have healing.
Oh, I love that. Reconciliation through forgiveness and renewal. Doesn't that state it?
Right, and there are so many wonderful conferences and events where people can go just to kind of find some hope. You know, they can find skills. We definitely need to learn better skills at communication and new perspectives and new spiritual resources to strengthen us toward building that reconciliation. So I want to encourage people to actually go seek out those kind of experiences. Mm. There are lots of weekend conferences or video conferences and things you can purchase or ask your church to purchase and bring whole groups of couples together. And, you know, it may be that you need to reach out and help people near you, or you've got relatives that need help. And so we've got tools at NationalMarriageWeekUSA.org where you can get those tools.
You know, we talk about the percentages of poverty as a result of, you know, broken train wreck situations here and all of these other things. So there's an economic component for sure in the lives as well as the collective of all of this. But if a person is waiting for the government to do it or some politician to do it, it just occurred to me that even the government is reflective of what is taught the people in their churches. It is through the churches that people learn right from wrong, good from evil. It is from the churches that young people are to learn what to look forward to in their emerging adult life. And I wonder if the churches took marriage more seriously, acutely, why, if that would be the best starting point to have it then reflect through the political process, through the legal process, through the government, and in every other way. Churches are not taking marriage seriously in speaking about it absolutely from the teenagers all the way through, so people understand it better.
I could not agree with you more. We really see the church as the grassroots of this movement. You know, the church is the natural school for marriage, but only 28% of our nation's churches offer any sort of class or program.
That means more than 70% do not.
I mean, that's abysmally low. We must change that. And that's part of our program, too, is to, if there are only 28% of the churches offering marriage classes, let's bump that up to 60, 70, 80%. And the reason I say that the church is the natural school for marriage is because there is no brick-and-mortar school building for marriage. Like, we have a school for almost every other skill in this country, you know, from computer science to dental hygienistry. We have a school, but there's no school for marriage, and that's why the church is it. So I really would like the idea of, if your listeners are in a church, to form a committee that will take this as seriously as let's say, the music ministry or missions work overseas or the Sunday school, and form a committee. Every church should have a marriage ministry. So that just would go a long, long way, and we have a toolkit where people can actually launch all that through a National Marriage Week campaign, and that's just a starting point. That's just to get people's attention. We have things on our calendar that are happening all year long, and so you make a very good point about the effectiveness of the local church to reach out and teach people the skills that they need.
Before I ask you for your website in the conclusion of the program, I want to raise this one thought that I had. Is it possible that we don't have schools for this, we don't have buildings for this, because in the original formation, we did have the Bible, the B-I-B-L-E. Yes, that's the book for me. We used to sing that in Sunday school when I was a youngster. But it was caught rather than taught. Mm. You see, this is generational, isn't it? When you mentioned 70% of the babies born in the Bronx are born to unwed mothers, that means there isn't even a starting point for that little child, you see, that's born. Well, who's the role model? Where do they gather their sense of life and perspective of all these things? But in those earlier days, it was caught, so you didn't have to formally teach it. You just caught it, like knowing how to tie your shoes, perhaps, or knowing how to do a lot of things. You caught it.
Oh, exactly.
But now, without being able to catch it, because there's no one to look at, why, then we have to teach it, and that gets right back to the church.
You are so right. We are losing role modeling. In fact, I even meet 23-year-old young, upwardly mobile women who say, gosh, we really don't even know what good marriage looks like because our parents were divorced.
And my grandparents were divorced.
Right. So they don't even know what it looks like anymore or feels like. Yeah. So we have a huge, something we're not talking about. We're losing role modeling for the future generations. Yeah. And with that loss of role modeling comes a loss of relationship skills. You know, you don't understand how to maybe deny your impulses for the sake of another person. Yeah. You don't understand how to ask forgiveness and to exercise forgiveness, or to restrain your impulses for the sake of another, or use self-discipline, or to be more loving.
Yeah.
So there are all kinds of skills that are getting lost because we're not modeling good marriages. Yeah. And the younger generation, we're going to have to do a job of retraining them.
Yeah. But praise the Lord, just like Dr. Benjamin Carson's mother, there is a way through the forest.
Mm-hmm.
There is a way to do it. And a person should always take heart and be inspired because others have done it in a far more difficult situation than we have. Now, tell me this. What is your website? Where can people go and learn more about what you're saying?
It's NationalMarriageWeekUSA.org. So add USA, NationalMarriageWeekUSA.org. And if people would like us on Facebook, then next year when we're gearing up, we'll send you a few little tidbits of information and reminders. You can register so that next year you can learn more about the things that are happening. But right now you can go to our national calendar and find an event near you, things that are happening all through February and the spring at NationalMarriageWeekUSA.org. And if you already have marriage ministry or events going on, we'd love for you to put your event up there. It's completely free. Put your event up and you get some free publicity for what you might be doing.
There you have it. Thank you very much, Sheila Weber, the Executive Director of National Marriage Week USA. This is Dick Bott with his chapter, The Complete Story, as a public service, and I'll see you later.